As you all know, selecting a superintendent is one of the most important decisions that our school board has to make, and I want to assure you that we take this responsibility very seriously. The search has been truly amazing, and our district is blessed to have so many talented educators who are interested in joining the Fayette County Public Schools team. One of the reasons I believe that people are drawn to our school district is because of the support and commitment of our community for our students, as evidenced by the participation of all our stakeholder groups that have met earlier today and the other groups that will meet this afternoon and again on Friday with another candidate. At this time, it is an honor for me to formally introduce our first finalist, Mr. Emmanuel Manny Calk. Manny has been the superintendent in Portland, Maine for the past 3 years. Portland is the largest school district in the state, although they are smaller than Fayette County. Their demographics mirror our community, with 55% of students living in poverty, a little more than 40% of students of color, and a growing population of students for whom English is a second language. Our community asks for a candidate with a record of success in an urban school district and documented results of consistently improving achievement for all students. And Manny certainly has that. He has worked in Chicago, Philadelphia, and East Baton Rouge, and has consistently closed gaps and transformed schools along the way. I don't want to take any more of your all's time away from Manny, so please join me in welcoming Mr. Manny Calk.
I say thank you to Chairman Price for those opening remarks. And if I may, want to use at least a portion of this time to kind of look back and address what some have looked at was the virtual instruction program that we, I did a start-stop launch in Portland. And I'll share this with you. In doing this work in urban districts across the country, I've seen firsthand the impact of what charters can do to a district or traditional public school system, to drain in terms of students, not only taking your high caliber students, if you will, but also the impact on resources. And so what's left is a school district that has students with greater needs and less resources. And so looking at how that played out in my work across the country, when we came to Portland, which was one of the few states to, or Maine, I should say, to pass legislation to authorize charter schools, we had a brick and mortar charter school that opened that already took some of our students. And what happens in terms of funding for charter schools, the money follows the child. So when you lose those students, you lose that funding stream from your local tax base. And that can have an impact in terms of resources, in terms of number of teachers. So it impacts the classroom as a real impact. And one of the things that we did with the first brick and mortar charter school, which was a math and science or STEM school, is we created a STEM endorsement. Because as the educational landscape changes in a state, districts must be able to respond to those changes in order to retain our students, in order to retain our tax dollars that our local taxpayers were willing to contribute to the public school system for the betterment of all students. And that's what public education is about. It's really about ensuring that all students have a pathway to success. And I really had an issue with a charter school that has a board that doesn't have sort of the accountability as you do with a traditional public school system. And so we responded appropriately with our brick and mortar charter school by having a STEM endorsement. And then there was legislation that passed, or approval of an online charter school. And so wanting to look at two approaches. One, how do you respond to this immediate threat in terms of the ability that you, as a district, you may lose students as a result of an online program? And then how you continue to do the advocacy such that if this new educational landscape has changed and you have the charter school entities, which were enacted by law, how do we ensure that our local tax dollars don't end up following the students, that we could retain that money? So there was a two-pronged approach. In Portland, we already had online courses. That's nothing new. We have AP for All. Students are taking AP courses online. They have been. Students are doing credit recovery online. They have been. Students were taking elective courses online. They have been, with multiple different providers. When we looked at the threat of the this charter entity, Maine Connections Academy, and we realized that we had students who have already signed up to attend. They do a letter of intent to attend the charter school. And so we looked at what would be a short-term solution. And we, being our management team, senior leadership team, how are we going to respond to this threat? We couldn't afford to spend, have more money leaving our district going to the charter schools. And if you look back at our budget, you'll see what we had budgeted for charter school expense. And so the Maine Connections Academy used Pearson as their online provider. What we decided to do is we're going to directly compete with them. We can use Pearson too. The parents already made a commitment and they liked the program and the features of Pearson, so we wanted to be able to give them an in-district option that was very similar. In addition, what made our program distinctly different is we had our teachers that we were going to have come in and do tutoring with our students 4 hours per week, so they had some face-to-face teacher contact. What was the budgetary impact? In Portland, if you look at a student who was grades pre-K through 8, regular ed, approximately $6,900 is the money that we would lose for every student that attended a charter, whether it's online or brick and mortar. Special ed K to 8 is around $15,700. Grade 9 through 12 regular ed is about $7,400, and grade 9, 12 special ed was around $16,000 or over $16,000. The Pearson partnership, again, was using the same online provider that our competitor was using. And I believe that if the educational landscape was changing and parents were given increased choice, there's nothing we could do about it as a district, I wanted to ensure that Portland was a parent's first choice. And so that was a way to recruit students back. When we did this work, we already had 7 parents out of the 10 who were looking to come back to the district if we were going to move forward with the program. My conversations with the mayor, and Mayor Brennan's the education mayor, I can't ask for a bigger advocate when it comes to ensuring that we're closing the opportunity gap for all students. His issue wasn't with Pearson. It was with the district partnering with a for-profit company, period. If I had used a nonprofit online provider, it would have been great. But it was Pearson, and I shared with him the rationale because that's the same program that our competitor is using, and that's what our parents have been exposed to, and we're looking to use that particular program. In speaking with our mayor, in speaking with our other elected official, our Senate president at the time, we decided that the two-prong approach, instead of using a short-term solution to do our online program, with a long-term solution to have our teachers develop the content and be able to place that online, that we would use the advocacy. And I'm proud to say that the advocacy approach worked in such that the state passed legislation where charters are not funded from local school districts, they're funded as a separate district. So we're able to prevent the impact of the loss of students to charter schools from draining the resources in our public school. That's first and foremost. And if I go back to just doing the quick math, with the program, if we were to retain those students, if they were special ed students, it would have resulted in $11,400 returned to the district, that money would have stayed in the district. And if it was regular ed, it would have been about $2,600 that would have retained or stayed with the district. If you look at being a chief executive officer, you're forced to make the best decision with the information you have. Made the decision. Obviously, we all learn from decisions that we make, et cetera, and things we would do differently. But I will always err on trying to do what's right for students and trying to retain jobs and trying to retain resources that we so desperately need in order to increase student outcomes. It's interesting when you look at that article, what group was the most threatened by an online provider in terms of partnering with an organization to deliver content to students? My teachers, right? Because it leads to the loss of teacher jobs. What you didn't hear were teachers speaking out against it. You didn't hear principals speaking out against it. They understood that this was a short-term strategy and our long-term solution was to have our teachers develop the content. So where are we at today in Portland? In Maine, again, the state has passed legislation, so charters are funded as a separate district. That's great. But what we're doing in Portland is our long-term solution. We have our teachers this summer, as we partner with our local community college, are going to be trained on how to develop their own content and put their courses online and be able to deliver it to students through a blended learning model. as we build up to our own online courses, very similar to what you find if you were to go to Harvard and see those courses that are online. And so that's using technology. All of our students have a one-to-one device, 6th grade through 12th grade, so we know our students can have access to that content. And we're very excited that our teachers are pioneers in wanting to utilize technology and leverage technology to deliver content to students. And that's part of our student-centered learning approach. So I really wanted to address that and underscore. I think what's also important is that by November, I got a new contract from the board that was unanimous in the full support of the mayor and full support of our business leaders and community leaders. So I think it speaks volumes. Sometimes as a CEO, you're going to take risks, and you're going to take risks in the betterment of your organization to improve it. So now turning attention to Fayette County, because that's what I'm really excited about, and to share with you some of my key takeaways from the marathon that we're going through and meeting with the various stakeholders. A couple things are clear and stand out. There's a deep passion in the community about the success of Fayette County Public Schools. There's partners, whether parents, community leaders, business leaders, faith-based community, that are charged, energized, ready to go, that want to see the district go from good to great and want to be a part of the solution. There's great capacity internally with our teachers who are excited and just looking for the direction, being able to move the organization forward, and the support. Great deal of energy from our school leaders. We have some amazing school leaders in Fayette County. The city and county should be proud of the school leaders you have here. And the same can be said with our central office staff, the cabinet, and everyone that's engaged in the work. And so the question becomes, as I'm starting to sort of process what I laid out in my mind thus far, really some key areas that we would look to address. One is student success. That's huge. And I see some, hopefully, Fayette County students here. Fantastic. Because you matter most. And making sure that you have the education that unleashes your full potential is very important. And so student success looks at two moral imperatives that I see evident in Fayette County Public School. There's first moral imperative. We have students who are proficient. We want to get those students to the global average to be globally competitive faster. And there's another moral imperative. We have students who are reaching towards proficiency. Some of the terms that we use here have been novice or apprentice. How do we get those students to proficient faster to ensure that every student graduates from high school prepared for college, career, and most importantly, prepared for life? The other area is great staff. Is how do we ensure that there's a robust professional development that's real time, not just for teachers and school leaders on the academic side, but the non-academic side of the house as well? And how do you put systems in place? Effective operations and systems for all of the departments that support teaching and learning, that support the work that's going on in our schools, is another area of focus. And then parent community engagement involvement, which is really an asset. And I'm telling you, the spirit and optimism from the group that stand ready to support and have supported the school system and will continue to support the school system is very high, and it's infectious. They have me excited about what's possible in Fayette County Public School. And so what I think is possible is for a district to have a future as bright as its past, to be able to build a school district, a great school district for a great city, to build a world-class system of great schools. I think that's possible here. And the more that I engage the community, the more I realize the opportunity that's before us all. So I'll stop there and see if there's any questions or.
We talked yesterday about your initial impressions of the district. After you've met with the stakeholders this morning, has that changed or has it sharpened any, and what can you tell us?
That's a great question. I think it's sharpened. One is that you have, from every sector that was represented, post-secondary, the business community, philanthropic community, they stand poised and ready to support a coherent strategy that's going to close the opportunity gap for students and ensure that every student has support cradle through career. The question is, you know, how can we help? What does that look like? You know, what is the strategy that we all can buy into to make sure that we're all going in one in the same direction? So there's one mission, one vision, one district, and how do we utilize and leverage our resources to support each and every student to ensure that they have a pathway to success? That was, I can't underscore that enough, that that's, if I were to look at a competitive advantage for Fayette County, that's one of the biggest competitive advantages that you have compared to other urban systems that I worked in.
If you're hired, what would be your first order of business?
That's a great question as well. The first is will be laid out in my entry plan. And the entry plan is around listening, learning, and leading, really in that order. Meeting with stakeholder groups, probably in roundtable discussions, looking to engage the public, so being public-facing. A group that I would want to engage is the state elected officials as well, to meet with them. Certainly as they onboard a new commissioner, I want to be able to meet with the new commissioner that's onboarded as well. So all of that would be detailed in the entry plan, as well as doing some work internally with central office, principals, teachers, focus groups, et cetera, and doing a very extensive sort of district diagnostic to find out, you know, what are some of the systems that we have in place that are working and where do we need to improve, with the key goal of creating a world-class system of great schools.
Have you come to any conclusions about what the district's biggest problem or greatest challenge is right now?
I'll underscore the challenge. Again, it's the moral imperatives. There's two. How do you get students who are proficient to be globally competitive faster? And how you get students who are reaching towards proficiency to get to proficiency faster? And in a system of supports that's needed. And it's not one to the exclusion of the other. It's really doing them both and doing them both very well for each and every student. It's part of ensuring that each student not only gets what they deserve, but gets what they need, and ensuring that for some of our students, their demography doesn't equal their destiny.
Let me ask a couple questions about closing the achievement gap. As you're no doubt aware, there is a national debate among policy advocates about how best to do it. There is a group that essentially says that schools should be responsible for closing achievement gaps through building cultures of success and that kind of thing. Groups like Broader Boulder are advocating a more comprehensive kind of an approach that essentially argues that schools alone can't do the job, and issues related to the health and safety of children as they arrive in school is a better place to put our resources. And then I saw this week where the group on Center for Disruptive Innovation came out with a report, and they're trying to split the baby and say what groups like KIPP and the Harlem group are doing, where they're integrating services from the community into the schools, is the right route to go. My question for you is, given the fact that the correlation between test scores and economics is our most enduring research statistic, how do you view that, and how will you try to close achievement gaps in Fayette County?
So, and that's a, those are some great questions. My question to you and really to the broader community is, when does that gap first reveal itself, right? So if you think about, when does that gap first emerge? When do we know that there's a gap?
Well, we notice it when we have kindergartners 2 years behind.
Thank you, right?
Day one.
That's the response. We notice it day one in kindergarten. So what that tells you about the strategy we need to employ. If the gap is there day one, what are we doing in terms of preschool? High quality preschool for every student who needs that strong start. That's first. Because as you just shared, the gap reveals itself in kindergarten day one. So how do we ensure that students are coming to school starting strong? So that has to be an emphasis in pre-K, and not just pre-K, but high quality pre-K programs. That's been a focus in districts that I've been in, and certainly a focus in Portland, that we started to increase parents' access to high quality pre-K programs. From there, the K-2 experience, looking at students in the primary grades, what supports are we giving to students to ensure that students are getting access to core curriculum, great instruction, having a great teacher, a research-based tier 2 intervention for students who need that additional support, and then how are we leveraging the use of time? How are we ensuring that students who need more time or given that time, and that time is used effectively? So how are we extending summer learning for students? How are we engaging the community and using our resources here? One, a lot of communities have a lot of seniors, if you will. How are we leveraging our seniors to come in and really work with our students as reading buddies? In Portland, we have our foster grandparents that come in and work with our students as well to add additional support. You mentioned another growing concern is really around social, emotional, and mental health. The best time to address that is in the primary grades as well. So that's leveraging the resources, whether the city, whether it's other social services agencies. How are we bringing that together? I think that's the evidence that the KIPP article that you refer to, some of those strategies, is really about educating the whole child. How do we do that and have a collective impact in that pre-K through 2, that primary schooling experience? And in Portland, and the same in Philadelphia, we put a stake in the ground, whether it's third grade or fourth grade reading, and making sure students are proficient or above by the end of those two grades. We used the marker in Portland at third grade, and Philadelphia was fourth grade. And so we have that time to get students caught up to close the gap. Your bigger question is, can schools do it alone, right? And I submit to you, as Pedro Noguera said in his research, that sometimes the systems are so distressed that they can't be improved from within, they have to be improved from without. And so that's where the community has a stake. And so I believe that we need the support of the community to really improve our schools if we're going to go from good to great. So I would subscribe to the fact that we will need additional support. What I found here in Fayette County is that there's huge energy from the community across the various sectors of our community that are willing and ready to give that support and help our students.
What success have you had closing achievement gaps past primary grades?
All right. So some success, it's all noteworthy. In the secondary level, so you look at Baton Rouge, even as a high school principal started there, of closing the opportunity gap, making sure that historically disadvantaged minority students have access to advanced placement and dual enrollment, more rigorous courses. You just don't put students in those courses. You have to put the requisite support so students can be successful. So we were able to do that, use those strategies that I learned in Chicago, apply that in Baton Rouge, and then apply those same strategies in Philadelphia, where we're able to increase student outcomes. In Philadelphia, our elementary schools are K-8. So when I say elementary, it's not K-5 and what you think about in Fayette County, it's K-8. And so there's the middle school component. We were able to do that and close the gap across our elementary schools, which include fifth grade or sixth grade through eighth grade as well. And the strategies were very focused around having a strong tier 2 intervention. Some of the same strategies in terms of giving students additional learning time, support. There's a role for the community to play, and more importantly, there's a role for parents to play as well. And so we have parent academies at our schools to work with our parents to understand how they best can support their child in their education pursuits and endeavors. We looked at working with a lot of the community partners, because a lot of parents had access to those community partners for different resources, so how we have collective impact in our community. That was important as well. So it was a comprehensive set of strategies that we employed in order to be effective at closing not only achievement gap, but the opportunity gap that was persistent.
Are you a candidate in any of the districts?
No.
Has anything happened since you arrived in Lexington that would dissuade you from coming here, or are you as enthusiastic as you were?
That's a great question. You may not see it because I'm an introvert, but I really am even more enthusiastic. I think when you come in, you're learning about the work, and this is the right work. I think I can be a catalyst. I think that we need to understand that the district, I was having a conversation off camera about how great the district was in the past. We want to get back to that, restore that luster. It didn't get to this point overnight. We won't get out overnight, so managing expectations, that this is really about having a plan that would extend, you know, multiple years, at least 3 years, to really get us moving forward and get the wind behind our sails, if you will. But other than that, I think the competitive advantages that are here, great teachers, great school leaders, supportive community, are all the ingredients for ensuring that every student has a pathway to success. And if it can be done anywhere, it can be done in Fayette County. I think this will be a hotbed of learning for other educators across the country about how to close the achievement opportunity gap and at the same time raise the bar for all students.
Well, if things work out and you're selected as superintendent here, have you had discussions with the board, or do you have thoughts about what kind of commitment you might be willing to make to Fayette County in terms of longevity? As you know, your record is marked, and typically for folks in our business, advancement is made by being willing to relocate sometimes. That's a good way to professionally move up the ladder. But we really don't need somebody just kind of passing through here. Can you talk a little bit about that commitment?
I can, and that's another great question. One, a lot of the work that I've done in the past was to bring me to this opportunity that's before me right now. And make no mistake about it, that I looked at and sought out Fayette County for all the reasons that were shared earlier. That it seems it would be a right fit for my skill sets in a place that I'm newly married. So if you see me sort of going over the ring a little bit, it's because I'm not used to wearing a ring on my finger, and it's a little sign to my wife that she's always with me. With that said, sorry about that. After 21 years, it's a two for one. It's a twofer. So if you hire me, then you hire my better half as well. After 21 years of knowing my wife, and we decided to get married, form this union to merge. You know, our families were looking to put down roots. Lexington is not only a destination city, but Fayette County is a destination district. If you look at the number of superintendents who applied for and want to be considered as a candidate for leading this district, it's phenomenal. And as I come to know the district, you know, I can't blame them. I mean, to put in, to be an opportunity to lead Fayette County would be quite an honor, and to put down roots in Lexington also will be kind of an honor as well. So it's not just professional, but it's also personal. I was really impressed with the meet and greet at the number of families that came up and to greet my wife and I, and I was very impressed by that. The same core values that you see in the Fayette County, sort of Lexington community, are the same core values that my wife and I share. And so that resonated with us as well. And we are ecstatic. I've been trying to reach out to her today, and whether it's cell phone service, et cetera, I couldn't get through to see how she's doing. But I will debrief with her later, but I'm sure the excitement is still there. So the other attractive piece about Fayette County, if you look back to the tenure of leaders here, you have great stability in your superintendents, which says a lot about the board, says a lot about the community. And that's important as well. And that's what we're looking for, is that commitment. I want to make a commitment to raise my family here. I need an equal commitment from the board that we can do the work here and do the work together for a long time.
Let me ask another one.
Please.
As you know, in our field, we tend to throw around superlatives as though they're true. And of course, we've asked our school board to bring in the superhuman person that can close achievement gaps through their personal magnetism and all that. And so you've been advertised as a transformational leader, and for the life of me, I'm not really sure I know what that means.
I can tell you.
There are a number of Fayette County administrators that believe that the district doesn't really need a transformation in a philosophical sense, but a superintendent who wants to be superintendent, not a micromanager, but a hands-on superintendent that can give information accurately to the field in a timely manner and run the district. Can you talk about how you'll handle getting the job done?
Yes. First, like I said, with me, I'm always data-driven. And so if you look even at our website, you'll see where we had various audits and studies done, because that creates a plan forward for improvement. And so with schools, I plan to be school-facing, to be visible in the schools. I'm not going to live in the ivory tower here. This is not what matters most. What matters most is the work that's happening in our schools. Some of the strategies that I employed currently and in the past is that I have my executive team meetings, so meeting with my cabinets will take place in the schools. And we'll pick, right now I do Tuesdays where I'm always in the schools, and then I also make frequent visits during the end of the week. So I try to be visible to see and support principals. So being district facing, but also being public facing, being politically facing, media facing, coming out here and meeting with you as well to apprise you as to what's going on in the district, engaging in truth telling, engaging in sharing our narrative, what we're doing well, where we hope to go. Our vision, strategy, and culture is very important, and sharing that out to the broader community, eliciting feedback and support from the broader community, trying to organize and leverage those supports. So with a transformational leader, going back to that statement, the way I deduce it is that it's a person who's a champion for all children. And that's what I have been and will continue to be, is really a champion for all children, making sure every student gets what he or she not only deserves, but what he or she needs.
And if you've got someone on your executive team that's not performing the way they need to, can you pull the trigger?
Well, what I look at, of course. So the short answer is yes. But I like to take a step back. And one of the things that I try to look at anyone that's on an executive team is looking at leadership capacity building and shared accountability. And so if a person's not getting the job done, how we supported that person, how we try to build capacity so they can be more effective in their role and executing of their task. The next part is shared accountability. If a person's not successful, it's not that you're not successful, it's what didn't we do? Right. And at the end of the day, what I look for, very clear, is I have a set of core beliefs that we would identify as a central office, as leaders in the district, or how we want to interface with one another, and a set of competencies in terms of here's the job, here's the functions, here's what we're looking for you to be able to deliver for students. And we hold each other accountable for not only the getting the job done, but getting the job done with people in a way that honors and respects our colleagues, that has a customer service, you know, sort of component to it, not only as we interface with the community, but how do we interface and engage one another? And so those are the two areas I always look at, is the core values and beliefs. How are we exemplifying those core values and beliefs in the work that we do? But also, how are we making sure that everybody has the capacity and the skill sets to be effective in their role and their function?
I want to go back to your earlier, your opening remarks, and I know that was a bit of a response, so to speak, but I want to know, how does that, the work that you were doing, translate to Fayette County Public Schools? Have you looked at the current laws and statutes here, or heard about the current conversations about charter schools and school choice here? And is there some way to preemptively translate that to Lexington, Fayette County, maybe offer more opportunities for online learning, et cetera?
Well, first, I would look to see in a district, are we currently utilizing any sort of online learning, whether it's for credit recovery, et cetera. Some of the laws, I know there's a sort of growing conversation about charter schools, right? And right now there's no legislation enacted to bring charter schools forward. I like to think that if Fayette County Public Schools is doing a great job, there wouldn't be a need for parents to look at other alternatives. So it's about making sure that we have a great system, a world-class system of great schools, and that Fayette County is a parent's first choice. So it's about meeting the needs of our parents and continue to do that. So if we could demonstrate through student outcomes that we're getting the job done, that we can deliver on that promise of having, of making sure that students are prepared for college, career, and life, I think that would bode well in trying to shift the conversation from charter schools and other educational opportunities to more of one that supports the work that we're doing in the district. I do champion and support the work that's been done around innovation, right? The educational landscape is always changing. How are we trying to be as innovative? How are we looking at how we deliver content to students in a way that honors their learning styles? So always continuously to look at what are those pieces of innovation that we can bring forward that's going to increase student outcomes.
Manny, how do you think, how do you think about working with the press? As I've looked at your record, of course, you've responded to the press many, many times. You wrote a regular column for the Forecaster, and then every now and again you would go silent. What should we expect from your administration?
Well, I tell you what, I don't think I went silent. I think that the press had other, you know, news to cover. I definitely didn't go silent. What's happening in media in Portland is probably what's going on across the country. Maine, I think it's Maine Today, it was just recently purchased by another entity. And so there are some sort of internal issues going on with the press there. But we've always, I think one good way to look at the news and what we're trying to push out is look at the website. And you see the press release. Sometimes, you know, the media comes out and covers events. Sometimes they don't because there's a competing story elsewhere. And so it's not that we necessarily go silent. It's just that the media may not come out and cover certain events that we deem are newsworthy. So how do we tell our story?
But right. You do comment on whatever.
Oh, I got my blog post, the monthly column. The only time I go silent is in the summer. I think I take off the month of July.
There were a couple of reports where the press would say they didn't get a comment or didn't get a call back.
Yeah. That's few and far between. They have my cell phone number, and sometimes they have a deadline. By the time I get the message, it's after the deadline. And I do follow up and try to call them back, and even though it's not going to appear, you know, in the next day's story because of one story piece, I try to give them our perspective, our side. But what you'll see if you look at the body of work is that whether the news is good, bad, or indifferent, we try to comment and give our side of the story as well. So very much accessible.
Lexington's a great place to live, it really is, but it is a very diverse group. In fact, and for some reason, since about 1985, we have gone through 9 superintendents. It is a very diverse group, as I mentioned, and with a lot of groups having many agendas, and they'll all come to see you very, very quickly. Will you be able to deal with that and prioritize and put things in priority that you?
Yes, it comes with the nature of the job that folks are coming to you wanting to help, etc. One of the, I'll just share with you my own insight and how I manage that. One of the things that I do, if you look at our district, we have a district scorecard, and I lay out all the data. So anyone coming to have a seat with me, I say, here's the problem that we're trying to solve. How can you help? You know, and then what has been your track record for success working with other districts or other systems to move the needle? You know, how can you be value added to the work that we're doing in the district? And so that's making sure that any partnership that's formed, it's with entities that share a similar mission and vision around doing this work. Another is we work together, whether it's the chamber, the post-secondary institutions, the city with the mayor that I mentioned earlier, Portland Public Schools, United Way, Opportunity Alliance, John T. Gorman, Sam L. Cohen Foundation. These are some local philanthropic organizations, and we formed Portland Connect Ed and said, here's the problem we're trying to solve in our community. Here's the metrics. How can we leverage our resources to have a collective impact? And out of that, we went in Portland Public Library as well. I don't want to exclude them. After out of that has been other entities that came on board, and we looked at how do we organize those resources to leverage the strategies that we're trying to impact when it comes to students. So those three areas we're focused on is ensuring that students come to school starting strong. So that's number one. The second area is around high school graduation, to ensure that students graduate prepared for college and career. The third is post-secondary completion. And so it's about really getting that data. So if you look at Fayette County, what's the university that most of the students go to, in-state post-secondary institutions? And then what is the completion in 5 years or 6 years? Are students walking out with a degree? So you look at that graduation cohort, how many students graduate, how many enroll in their first semester, right, after graduation, and then how many of those students receive a post-secondary degree, certificate, whether it's going to a community college, et cetera, within a requisite time period afterwards. Most districts are only concerned about K through 12. What we looked at through Portland Connect Ed, we're concerned about K through 16.
Have you ever been at this stage of a process with any other school district aside from Portland?
Yes.
How does Fayette County's compare as far as number of stakeholder meetings, opportunities to meet the community? How does Fayette County compare to other cities?
Very similar. Very similar. This process, I call it speed dating, was employed in another district. I'll share it with you. In fact, if you look into the internet, you'll find out yourself. I was one of four finalists when I was a high school principal, right? And she got me then. I knew everything as a high school principal. The more I learned, the more I realized how much I don't know. So at any rate, As a high school principal, I was a finalist in Montgomery County, Alabama. And they had a very similar process as this. You know, didn't get the job, and thankfully not. But it was a great experience. You know, just to be considered a finalist was a great experience. And again, I'm going up against superintendents, and I was just a high school principal at the time. But I believe that, you know, I could impact, you know, the world, at least Montgomery County, Alabama.
He's got 4 o'clock at the Equity Council. Make it quick.
It is a quick question. Can you give us some examples? This is a question about students with disabilities. In your current or prior jobs, positions, can you give some examples of things you have done to improve the student achievement of students with disabilities to like close achievement gaps or just improve their learning for students with disabilities? Examples of things that you have found that were successful.
I go with the latter, to improve their learning, because students with disabilities, each student's unique and has their own giftedness. And so it's putting them all into sort of one group really diminishes some of the uniqueness that our students have. But a really quick example is we use a strategy which is a team approach to mastery, and that's having a classroom setting where you have a special education teacher teaching side by side with a regular education teacher that's really focused on, if it's elementary, they both are certified, so you have high quality teachers in that classroom. The classroom setting is an inclusive setting, so you have some students in there that are identified, students that are not, and if you walk into that classroom, you couldn't tell who was a regular ed teacher, quote unquote, who's a special ed teacher. We use different strategies, one teach, one drift, small groups, etc., right in the same classroom. And we found those students, through that cross-pollination, having that heterogeneous class, that it lifted really the performance of all learners. So really it's about the least restrictive environment and providing supports for those students when they're in the least restrictive environment. That is the key. With that said, we also had really deep professional development so that our regular ed teacher and special education teacher could work closely together. I mean, ongoing professional development as well, and create a culture where the both teachers owned all the students. So it wasn't, you know, these are your students, but these are our students, right? All right, thank you.
Thank you, Manny.
Thanks again.
Thank you.